Despite the hush money trial, Donald Trump's win against ABC. Lots to talk about involving Donald Trump on the legal front. Let's bring in George Zanini, the criminal defense attorney at Butts Along. George, it's good to have you back, my friend.
Yes, thank you for having me. Good to talk to you.
Let's start with the latest news. So Judge Juan Marchand struck down Donald Trump's request to have all 34 felony counts thrown out under the presumability that what the Supreme Court had ruled involving presidential immunity would qualify here. Judge Juan Marchand said that that doesn't apply because this was all done, according to Marchand, under unofficial standards. What did you make of that decision?
Yeah, I wasn't surprised, to tell you the truth. I mean, this is the judge who presided over the trial, and he's basically saying, you know, the things that I allowed into the trial were correct, and so I'm going to stand by the jury's verdict. But there's much yet to be determined in that case, and I think even there, the prosecutor is saying, you know, we can't be essentially sentencing who will soon to be the sitting president of the United States. That would make no sense.
So then, what's the next steps here? What do we see in this case?
I guess if I'm going to prognosticate, and obviously, you know, only time will tell. I think at least in that forum, now obviously you have appellate courts, but I think in that forum with this judge, the conviction will stand, but there will be no sentencing.
And then, of course, you've got Alvin Bragg on the other side of things in another trial that says he wants to just shelve this thing and wait for Donald Trump, his term to be up, and then bring sentencing to him then. Is that something that is doable, conceivable? Is that something that could actually be done here, or what do we make of those cases and those charges?
Yeah, look, this is obviously a very unique circumstance, probably never to be repeated. But, you know, I guess if the conviction stands, and again, I'm sure there will be a full court press in the appellate courts to try to undo that. But if, you know, if that sits and the sentencing just continuously gets adjourned until he's no longer the sitting president, I guess it's theoretically possible, but at that point, what energy does anybody have around that? I just don't know.
And then, of course, you know, Donald Trump was actually was successful in his lawsuit against ABC and George Stephanopoulos because they came to a settlement this week. ABC pays Donald Trump $15 million. George Stephanopoulos coughs up $1 million. It'll all go towards what eventually will probably be a Donald Trump library. But were you surprised to see how that case shook out on the defamation front?
Well, look, I mean, surprise, you got to kind of be in the throes of the litigation, and who knows what's going on in the discovery process. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, what do the emails say? You know, I know that Mr. Stephanopoulos was scheduled to be deposed. I will say that surprised to some extent because the standard for a public figure to prove defamation case is very high. He would have to prove actual malice, and that is a very high standard that the Supreme Court ruled upon many, many years ago, decades ago, in fact. So I think that's the surprising piece. You know, again, that said, what was going on behind the scenes, and I don't know if you want to get into it, but, you know, it really boils down to the difference between what George Stephanopoulos said in his interview repeatedly, that President-elect Trump was found liable for rape when he wasn't, but he was found liable for sexual abuse. That may sound like a distinction without a difference, but there is a difference between those two.
Well, and certainly in the state of New York, there is a difference. You know, the other part in this too is, you know, he talked about it in his press conference yesterday, going after the Des Moines Register for what one of their pollsters had predicted pre-election, that Donald Trump was actually slated to lose Iowa, which traditionally hadn't been the case in his two previous attempts to run for president, one successfully, one unsuccessfully. And then he kind of compared it kind of tantamount to election interference. And he said that, look, the realities are he feels that he has a duty to go after some of these news agencies to try to make right and try to basically force their hand into what he would deem to be fair coverage. How would an entity like a news organization or a parent company of a newspaper or whomever, because they all have legal departments. So how do they juxtapose covering somebody, covering an incoming and then probably, you know, sitting president, to then making sure that they don't cross a legal line?
Yeah, look, I think that the short answer to your question is I think they have to proceed in good faith. So I think that the thrust of that case, this is the Des Moines Register case, is that the pollster, I believe her name is Ann Selzer, basically came with her polling that said, you know, Trump was, or Harris was up by, I don't remember what it was.
It was like 3 or 4 points, yeah.
3 or 4 points, and then Donald Trump winds up winning by 13% in Iowa. You know, if that was a validly conducted poll, and the newspaper had no reason to believe it was otherwise, then I think the newspaper can properly report on it. If, however, the polling was fabricated, which I don't assume, but if it was, and then if the newspaper knew that it was fabricated and reported on it just to try to swing the election in a different direction and try to convince people who would otherwise go out and vote for Mr. Trump not to, then I think you have a very real problem. But again, that's why these cases rise and falls on the evidence. And so you have to go through the discovery process. You have to determine, you know, was the polling done properly? And then even if it wasn't, what did the newspaper know at the time of its reporting?
You know, when you're I've never been to law school. I assume that when you're in law school, you're doing a lot of research. You're looking into cases that would provide some sort of basis for legal standings that would precede those decisions in those cases. So you're always looking at these cases. You're always looking at evidence in these cases and what maybe lawyers did right, what they didn't do right, and kind of juxtaposing all of that as you're becoming an attorney. Have you ever seen somebody like this in our history that has been so roundly surrounded in all of the legalities here, whether it's cases against him, cases that he is suing for on his behalf? Have you ever seen anything like this before? And if not, what type of information do we learn from somebody like Donald Trump?
Well, look, I haven't done any kind of testing on who is the most serial litigant in the country's history, but I do agree with you that Donald Trump, both as an individual before he ever entered into politics and once he's been in politics, definitely has been involved in his fair share of litigation, both defending cases that have been filed against him or his companies. And in affirmative litigation like those we're talking about involving the press and otherwise. he's certainly got probably a better grasp on the legal system than even I do or many lawyers do, because, as a serial litigant, you learn as you go along, and he's probably developed quite an understanding of the law in the various cases that he's been involved in.
Yeah, it's an interesting case study from somebody like indeed. Donald Trump. George Dini, always great to pick your brain. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Have a good holiday. We'll talk to you very soon.
All right, same to you. Thanks very much.
Yep, you got it. That is George Giannini at Budsell Long.